Any one of you that has been around children very much recognize one declaration that kids so often make. That's not fair. A woman by the name of Ann Crittenden wrote a book for women considering business careers, and it was titled, If You've Raised Kids, You Can Manage Anything. And in her book, she says that children are hardwired for fairness. This is probably due, she suggests, to the bad old days when parental partiality could be fatal to the less favored child. As an example, she tells a story about when she visited the Galapagos Islands, where she observed the parenting practices of a bird that hatches two eggs each time. And then she watches these two eggs closely and observes which of the newborn chicks is sturdiest and most likely to survive. Then she boots the other chick out of the nest to die. It appears that it was just a spare. Well, small children, writes the author, view any trace of parental favoritism with the same panic that must be felt by this luckless chick. Every parent has heard the anguished cries of, her piece is bigger than mine, or I want one just like Carrie. You love him better than me. It's the oldest contention in society. That's not fair. I mean, remember Adam and Eve's two boys, Cain and Abel? They brought their offerings to God, and for some reason still unknown to me, God accepted Abel's offering, but not Cain. That's not fair, Cain thought to himself. His resulting anger was the source of humanity's first murder. We hear it not only among children, but among adults as well. That's not fair. That's one of the reasons we have lawyers and judges and, if things get out of hand, police. It's the reason why some families are so sadly split after the reading of a will. And I've seen that too often in my life and my career. It's why some people will always feel victimized in our society. It's because, as I tell my children even now at 24 and 28, life is not fair. At every layer of society, someone is complaining about the lack of fairness. This is not new. And so Jesus told a parable about a landowner who went out early in the morning, about 6 o'clock, to hire the workers for his vineyard. Now, this was common practice in that part of the world, particularly during the grape harvest. Storms and the intense heat could easily ruin the crop, and it was important to get the harvest in as quickly as possible when it was ripe. So for a time, anyone who wanted a job could have one. The work was really hard. The working hours were basically from dawn until dusk, which in the Mediterranean country especially, it meant a 12-hour day. The wage, it was a standard one, a denarius or a silver coin. Now, a denarius was not only the average daily wage for a worker, but it was also the average cost of surviving one day for the masses of poor families in Israel. It didn't allow any room to maneuver. The denarius would buy your family what they needed to stay alive. No more, no less. So a day's work and a full day's wage were essential to survival in those days. Well, during the grape harvest, men who wanted to work would go to the marketplace and stand around. It's much like going to an employment center in the morning to look for a job for the day in our society. They would work for 12 hours and then they would be paid at the end of the day so that each person could go home with money to buy food for his family. Now, if a man was unable to find work on a particular day, then his family would not eat that day. If he found work for only part of the day, and thus unable to earn a whole denarius, his family would eat, but not enough to stave off a hunger pang. So I hope that you'll appreciate then what's at stake for the workers in this story that Jesus told. It's not only about fairness. For some of these workers, it's about survival. And that, I think, helps us to understand some of the dynamics of this story. The landowner went out at 6 o'clock in the morning to hire workers, and he agreed to pay them the standard wage, the denarius, for their day's work. About 9 in the morning, he went back to the marketplace, and he saw some other men standing around doing nothing. Well, obviously, there were no jobs available to them, and he told them, "You go also and work in my vineyard, and I'll pay you what is right." So they went. He went out again about noon and then about 3 in the afternoon and did the same thing. Well, almost when the day was over, about 5 in the afternoon, the final hour of the workday, he went out and he saw these others still standing around. And he told them to work in his vineyard too. Well, when quitting time came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, "Call the workers in and pay them their wages, beginning with the last ones hired and going on to the first." Well, can you imagine about those workers who were hired about 5 in the afternoon when they came and each one received a denarius? Can you imagine how deliriously happy these workers must have been? A full day's wage for only 1 hour of work. They would be able to feed their family. They'd be able to pay their bills. And how in the world, under these circumstances, could they contain their joy? And that created the problem. When those who were hired first came to be paid, they knew how generous the landowner had been with those who had worked only an hour. And so they, of course, kind of expected that they'd have a pretty big bonus. Can you imagine their disappointment when they also received that denarius? They began to grumble. Those who were hired and worked for only 1 hour, they said, "You've made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the work and the heat of the day." The landowner answered one of them, "I'm not being unfair to you, friend. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Take your pay and go. I want to give the one who was hired last the same as I gave you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I'm generous?" And then Jesus added those cryptic words at the end, "So the last will be first, and the first will be last." But we'll save that phrase for another sermon. You see, this is a parable of the generosity of God. God pours out His grace full and completely on all of us who will receive it. We who have labored in the vineyard as Christians for most of our lives would like to think that maybe we'll get a little extra measure of grace in return for our many years of service. But it's not going to happen. It cannot happen. God's love is without limit. God pours out His grace without reservation and without regard to who deserves it and who does not. And if that bothers you, get over it. Grace is poured out in infinite quantities on you and on me. It's totally unearned. Whether we've labored for Christ for 50 years or for the last 50 minutes, all we have to do to receive God's grace is to open our hearts to it. To some people, it doesn't seem fair. It's no wonder it's called Amazing Grace. The writer Philip Yancey tells about an incident that occurred a few years ago. And journalist Bill Moyers created the documentary based on the hymn Amazing Grace that I showed at Symposium last year. And one of the more unusual scenes in the film took place at a massive benefit concert in England. All day at this concert, the fans had been blasted with some fantastic, hard-driving rock music. But strangely, the concert organizers had scheduled opera singer Jesse Norman to close the concert. Well, the fans, the rock fans in particular, reacted negatively when Miss Norman first took the stage. Here was a middle-aged black woman without any band or any accompaniment, depending completely on her voice. But she silenced the crowd with her opening line, "Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me." And it wasn't long before thousands of the rock fans were singing along with this humble, life-changing hymn. It's been said that there are more people who know the words to Amazing Grace by heart than know our national anthem. Now, many of you may have seen the 1998 movie, I imagine most of you have, Saving Private Ryan. And as you know, Saving Private Ryan is about the invasion of Normandy in World War II. Let me remind you about the movie. It opens with an elderly man walking through a cemetery perched above the Normandy beach where the Allied troops landed on D-Day. And the man approaches a grave at the cemetery and he kneels down in front of that grave weeping. Well, suddenly the movie jumps back to the day of the invasion. And for the next 20 minutes we watch one of the most horrifying war sequences ever filmed. Some 5,000 Allied troops were killed or wounded on the beaches of Normandy that day. And it seems every time I see this movie, like it shows every one of them in anguishing and personal detail. Well, finally, the beachhead is established, and for a moment, the troops are saved. But then the real plot of the movie begins. 8 soldiers who survived the invasion are sent to rescue an American paratrooper named Ryan, who was dropped behind enemy lines. They go through harrowing experiences to find him, and when they do find him, several men lose their lives trying to rescue him and get him out. The last one killed is the captain of the unit, played by Tom Hanks. And as he dies, he says to this Private Ryan, he says, "Earn this. Earn this." Well, at that moment, the movie switches back to the gray-haired man at the cemetery. And we realize that we're looking at Private Ryan, now in his 70s. He's kneeling before the grave of the captain, and he slowly stands up, and he turns to his wife, and he says, "Tell me I've been a good person." His wife is puzzled and she doesn't understand the question. But we who have been watching the movie, we understand it completely. He's asking her, "Tell me that my life has been worth saving. Tell me that I have fulfilled the purpose for which the captain gave his life." Well, that's how many of us feel about our lives in the Christian faith. We know that God's grace is free. We know that we did nothing to deserve it. And we hunger in our hearts to think that our lives are lived in response to God's love and that they're proving worthy of that love. What kind of people would we be otherwise? Amazing grace. It's not fair. It's not just. It's simply unbelievably generous. And it is all ours for the taking. Amen. As we pause now in our worship for our time of personal and silent prayers, we would ask that you surround with your prayers Gordon Buck's family and Roberta Gelger's family, as well as the family of Joyce Orr. Let us remember these and the unspoken loved ones of your hearts and your minds in silent prayer.